Salutations and shit, folks. Welcome back to another episode of your favorite travel podcast, Travel and Shit, where I, your host, D. Carrie, have an experiential conversation about the nuanced ways that travel intersects with regular life. And as I like to remind you guys, especially when I'm joined by another beautiful face, the podcast is available on the YouTubes. So just put in Travel and Shit Podcast, or just go to the description box of wherever you are hearing my voice now and look at the beautiful face that is joining me to my beautiful guest. Thank you so, so, so very much for joining me. Lynette, if you would please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Harry. Hi, my name is Lynette from Uganda, East Africa, a tour operator. And that again, they are freak, and I'm very excited to be here to share about the tourism industry and then also learn as much as I can. Yes, thank you. I've been in the industry for over 8 years, worked in Uganda, Tanzania, Zimbabwe, Zambia, Botswana. Yeah, so I do trips in all those countries as I've gained the experience over the years.
And I'm very happy to have you here with me. So what primary is your role as a tour operator? What services do you provide in your day-to-day? Like, what is your company and what services do you provide?
Okay, thank you. So our company name is Tugende Afrik. And clearly what we provide is full logistical services on ground handling. So we we don't do tickets, so it wouldn't book for you your ticket from the US, but we do all the ground handling. We would book for you your accommodation, the vehicles you're going to use, the airport pickups, we shall design for you the activities. If you do not know what exactly you want to do, we can recommend. So usually we have some clients book appointments prior and they say, you know, can we have a chat about what they would like to do? Some look at our website where they are prepaid or even pre-designed itineraries and they select, or we just share with some of the trips which are on promotion that maybe this year we have these trips scheduled throughout the year. You can have these. So usually we do a lot of wellness travels for women, women of color. Mm-hmm. So, our wellness travels are usually centered around culture, rejuvenating, relaxation. So we have a lot of culture trips matched with the island. So we have Uganda culture matched with Zanzibar. So you have the serenity, you have the immersion of culture, but then you also have the serenity of the beach, the white sands, and all the beauty that comes with Africa. Yes. So usually that's all we do. We do the whole value chain, accommodation, activities, all the ground handling that is involved, and also advice depending on your interests as a person. In case you do not know what exactly to expect on ground, we share some tips and ideas, what to expect. Like, we don't want you to get shocked. Like when you get to the airport and you're like, you know.
So my first question for you would be, how is the region that you're in, the region of East Africa, different from, say, West Africa? I know that I've had guests prior talk about visits to Nigeria, Ghana. So primarily, like, I'm pretty sure, I think one guest had, like, a tour where they may have been in, like, Tanzania for one stretch of it. But I feel like you're the first person that's really discussed East Africa with me. So how would you describe that region, and how would it, I guess, compare to the different regions that somebody might expect when they come visit?
Okay. So East Africa is a boiling point of travel in Africa. And what you should expect, first of all, we have some of the best safaris, you know. The safaris in East Africa, you're not going to see them anywhere else. And I'm saying this with guarantee because I have traveled to the south where they also have the Zimbabwe, Zambia, Botswana safaris, which are also beautiful. But there's a difference. They are different. Example, case in point, that the seasons, because we have different seasons, East Africa is not so highly affected by rainy season or dry season. In East Africa, we have rain almost three times every month, mm-hmm. a minimum, even the dry areas. Some dry areas can have a full month of dry, okay. but hardly do we have 3 months of pure dry in the whole of East Africa. And this is Kenya, Tanzania, Uganda. You know, Uganda, where I am currently,
okay.
it is basically raining almost every week or every okay. other time. You know, so it's a beautiful, beautiful climate. It's green throughout the year. You know, something which you'll not see in South. In South, there are literally 4 months of pure dry. So it's going to be purely dry. Even if you go for a savanna, it's going to be dust.
Okay.
And
okay.
brown grass and brown trees and mm-hmm. everything brown. You know. But then you still find wildlife. But in the East African safari, if you're talking about the Serengeti, Ngorongoro, in Uganda, we have Murchison Falls, we have Queen Elizabeth. Okay. In Kenya, we have the Mara. Those parks are green. Even in the dry season, they're a bit of green, something which you wouldn't find in other national parks. Then, okay. apart from the wildlife, the culture in East Africa is rich. You know, Uganda alone has over 50 tribes. Tanzania has 120 tribes. You know, Kenya the same, okay. but with Kenya and Tanzania, the most dominant yes. and exploited tribe is the Maasai, which is really sold as a tourist product. But in Uganda, we have the Majong, we have the Baganda.
Okay.
So when I'm taking my clients mainly for the wellness trips, I usually bring them to Uganda because here they can have cultural immersion. They can, you know, go to the Ankole region where they do the milking of the cattle early morning, the mm-hmm. authentic cattle breeds, and they see how they make cheese or ghee locally, you know, and they eat all these authentic meals, and they see how they wrap food in banana fibers, and they share and teach the culture mm-hmm. and diversity. You know, same thing with a bit of Tanzania in Arusha area. You know, so there's a lot of richness in mm-hmm. the culture merged with the wildlife. That's something okay. that I know with East Africa. And the weather is amazing. The food varieties are unmatched. I mean, Uganda okay. is the boiling point huh. for food varieties. If someone wants to do culinary tourism, Uganda. Because as I have said, yes, it's crazy. We have fresh foods throughout the year. Throughout the year, you're going to go to the markets and find fresh everything, vegetables, fruits, you know, plant-based shoots.
Stuff is in season.
Stems.
That's a really good point. So
those are things.
That's a really, really good point. You don't really think about that. Stuff is always fresh when it's in season. And if you've got like rainy season all year, if it's always green there, I never considered that the climate, like a climate that rich, that is always fertile, would also produce the fact that you have everything in freaking season. Ah, that makes sense that the food would be really good there. I'm so very intrigued there because I have leaned a lot more into eating my way through a place. I'm not very big on nightlife and like bars and clubs and stuff, but what's that culture like out there? What's the music like? Because I do love a good live show. Are there like, do you have major artists do like musical stops? Are there any festivals in the area? For the people, the face, give it to me. Okay, talk to me.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
yes we do okay. have so many. Every weekend, there is a show of a particular artist, you know, and then usually maybe every 2-3 months, there are usually events like Blankets and Wine. So usually Blankets and Wine is also a show, but a more mm-hmm. like upscale show where you bring your blankets, you sit down on mats, you bring your wine, and the artists are performing.
Okay.
But every day there is a place in Kampala where there is a band playing, you know, and the bands are really, really good. They have designed their craft over the years. So there's a band okay. playing everywhere. Every week there's a band playing somewhere within Kampala. The clubs are packed, mm-hmm. you know. There's clubbing from Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. You know, I'm sure even on Monday, clubs. I've designed some packages for African-American okay. clients, people of color, and they love nightlife. And we have not had a night fail to get them as
I was
going to
ask. Okay.
Have a good time. The music is basically Afrobeat, but a mixture. So we have a lot of... We have our Ugandan artists. We have our Diamond just down south here, Diamond Platinum. You know, we have a lot of Nigerian music coming in. But then even our local artists are really good and have designed mm-hmm. a very beautiful craft and have very, very good vocals and good music. You know, some of the music, even if you don't understand the language,
yeah,
just the way they match the saxophone and their voices, some play around with the piano, Some use guitars. Okay. So a lot of our artists have mastered the craft of quality vocals, you know, and music production. So we have a variety of that though we merge it, all mm-hmm. our clubs merge it with mm-hmm. Nigeria.
So what people, would be your Jamaica, favorite part of your culture you know? To share with your clients when they come? Like what type of cultural experiences do you enjoy? Like which one would be your favorite to share with someone to come visit? What okay, give me one you, two or
like,
three.
I feel like I'm constrained, but
okay.
I'm from the center. Yes. Yeah, two. So the first cultural okay. aspect that I would love to share is the food preparation process. Historically, we used to make our food, like the way food was prepared mm-hmm. was a form of art or was a form of communication. You know, even the way because they used to wrap it in banana fibers, so banana leaves, the whole process, when I'm taking my clients through it, because we take them to a whole culture village, and they sit down on mats, and they bring the fresh food, they peel it straight from the ground, the whole process, these stories attached, you know, how the food is prepared is in resemblance to how a woman has to behave in marriage. You know, so if you're cooking for 20 people, it also has an aspect of sustainability, because if you're cooking okay. for like 20 people, you can cook for 100 people in just one bunch. Mm. You know, it's how you tie it all up. So there's a lot of story attached and a lot of cultural history and ethics attached to how food was prepared and how they used to put banana leaf, how many leaves do you put and why. So there's a lot of history and ethics mm-hmm. attached to the food preparation process. Just that now, that's just for the central. Even the Ankole, who are cattle keepers, who do a lot of milk and ghee and millet. Even the way that their women, the houses where they use the huts, where they do the ghee from, where they store the mm-hmm. milk, because there's a particular platform where they store the milk. All the houses, all the families have that platform. And they have their particular bowels where they put the milk, and they have where they smoke the bowels to preserve the milk to stay longer and fresher and have a good scent. You know, so there's a lot of history attached in just the food preparation of all these cultures. And we have not even talked about the dances of the cultures. We have not talked about the society lifestyles, how mm-hmm. the men maybe were the leaders of the families and the women most times were staying at home. In some cultures, the agriculture. So there's a lot of interesting discovery of a society just by looking at its culture. And even just looking at the way they prepared their food. There's wow. a lot of information just
you're good at this, man. Package. You're very good at this. So what would you consider like a wellness trip? I looked at one of your social media posts, and like a lot of different people have a different perspective of what wellness is, right? So some people look at wellness as doing absolutely nothing. They want a beach, they yeah. want one of the cabanas, don't talk to me, or just come bring me something to drink, make sure I am hydrated, make sure I've got a little nosh. And then other people want to do them, I need yoga at 6, I need my hike, I need fresh matcha. They want to do all the things that they feel maybe they don't have time for in regular life. Like, do you guys offer different packages? Do you have customizable packages? What types of things do you have available to you in the regions that you specialize in that can kind of speak to different people that have different desires or tastes around what wellness may look like?
Yes, that is true. Mm-hmm. Wellness is a whole different ballgame. Everyone understands it differently. And yes, we do have different packages. When a client comes to me, or when a group of maybe 2-3 friends come to me, or a couple, and they want to go for a wellness,
okay,
I first invest time to understand exactly what they're looking out for. Because some people, if their love is for the forests and the green, they would want their wellness get away to be in a place with a lot of green, you know. If their idea mm-hmm. of a wellness is maybe the beach, white sand, beautiful, relaxing, they would want that. So I would get an idea of, okay, This definitely is Zanzibar.
There we go.
Some want to have an image, a blend, because something I notice is many people from the diaspora have a challenge traveling to Africa because of the cost of the travels, the tickets. Sometimes are insane, they're through the roof. And what we do is we maximize that. Okay, you've come to Africa. What can you do? How much can you do? So at least the price of the ticket is justifiable. So usually we do a cultural immersion experience in Uganda and then later fly to Zanzibar for the sun beasts, the sun kissed and soul nourished getaway where you just be at a luxury resort, you know, relax. There are activities if you want. There is tennis on ground. There is yoga. There are Pilates. You know, if you have a child, there is literally a daycare where you take the child the whole day. They take care of the child. All covered. Just relax and breathe. If you want some small activities, maybe some Safari Blue, maybe some Stone Town, we can throw it in. Mm-hmm. If you want nothing, we leave it open for you to just relax. So we usually do that blend. Right. Actually, a number of people have really, really liked it because that way they get to do a bit of culture and safari in Uganda. And those who do that, who want to do the mountain gorillas off their bucket list, we throw it in as well, the tracking of the mountain gorillas. And then they fly to Zanzibar for 2-3 more days to just relax.
So what do those visa and passport requirements look like for, say, American and UK tourists? Like Americans, well, I guess though Canadians in there. Canadian, y'all be listening. Hey, y'all. But especially like Americans and Europeans is the other one I was saying. What do those visa requirements look like? Okay.
Visa applications for the Americans is online. I believe it's $50. It's really cheap. It's usually they do an online application. They get a response, which later they now submit to the when they arrive.
Okay.
So it's very easy. It's online even for...
And do you get like an immediate response or do you get like a response in like a couple of days? They just email you back your visa with like the amount of time that it's valid or something?
Yes. Oh, they also ask you. They ask you if you want a 5-day visa, if you have a tourist visa. Okay. So there are selections. And the tourist visa usually... after 30 days. For Tanzania, you get it within 2 days. For Uganda,
and
it's within 24
do you,
hours.
You have a is there, so you have to apply for the different ones for whichever country, of course, you're going to visit. Are there any, like, regulations around, like,
Not necessarily. If you're going to do Tanzania, if you're going to do Kenya, Uganda, and you also want to do Rwanda, if you're interested in Rwanda as well, there is what they call the East African visa, which lets you go into three countries. So you just get the East African visa. I believe it's $100. So you get it.
So depending on what your itinerary is going to look like, obviously, is how you're going to base your visa. And do you know if that's like a 3-month left on your passport, a 6-month left on your passport? Do you know how much time they want to show on your passport?
Yes, at least 3 months. Ooh. 3 months on your passport.
Okay.
And also you have to have
a
minimum of 10 pages, free pages.
Oh, that's a good thing to note. So in terms of what you had mentioned prior about like the price of getting so far away for a lot of us in the North American area, especially whether you're on the East Coast of the United States or the West Coast, Midwest, whatever. What are the accommodations like? So once we get over there, for example, we know that it costs a lot to say get to like Bali, but once we get to Bali, we know that the dollar goes pretty far. We could stay like in a 4-bedroom house for what we would, you know, we couldn't even get like a Howard Johnson for, you know what I mean? What that might cost here in the United States. What do the accommodation options look like in the East African region you're in? Like if you had to be on a budget, can you still have comfortable accommodations or are you looking at, say, a hostel and having to, say, share housing with people? Or are Airbnbs or VRBOs, you know, I know some people do couch surfing. Like, are there different like intermediate options? And then of course, when you have the hotel option, you've got like hotels and then you've got resorts. So like there are hotels that'll get you like, all right, so I know I'm spending a pretty decent amount, but I'm not spending the all-inclusive. I'm not spending a resort pass fee and all those other kind of things because I just want someplace nice to stay. But then you got your resorts where everything is included. I'm going here for the massages, the three restaurants, the shopping, and all that other jazz. So how are we looking across the board? And are those different options accessible to people within different budgets?
Yes. So
okay.
Within the price varies a lot.
Of where? In Uganda?
So within Kampala, okay. Which is the capital, it will be easy to get a decent, mm-hmm. yes, in Kampala. Even Arusha in Tanzania, even Dar es Salaam, you can easily get a decent accommodation, okay. Like a hotel with maybe bed and breakfast at $50, you know, $50.
Okay.
And this is like a decent, it's decent. It's not a hostel. It's not like a parking area.
Okay.
I know hostels in Arusha where you can get them at $20. But these are hostels, $10. Yes. Even in Uganda, you can get a hostel at $10, $20, you know, but that's our hostels. So with decent hotels, I think we can start with $50 at a fair price. Yes. But then if you're going into the national parks, prices change for the accommodation. So here we're going to look at prices will go up to 100, 120 to 100. For a different lodge.
I didn't know you can stay on the park grounds.
A bit out of town. Yes. But then, yes, there mm-hmm. are lodges within, some within the park, some on the sides of the park, on the park boundary. Yes. And usually because of their location,
that makes sense.
They have a tax they pay. So the price of accommodation goes a bit up. But then also to price of hotels in Uganda is a bit on a higher level, mainly in lodges, compared to Tanzania. Now, in Tanzania, you would easily get a five-star lodge at $200. While in Uganda, $200, you might get a four-star lodge, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a bit of difference in terms of the quality. So usually what I would do for my clients, I usually give them budget accommodation within Kampala, which is the capital city, because it's still very good accommodation. Then the national parks, we get a bit high end. And usually when they are flying now to Zanzibar, I usually now splurge and let them be in a resort so they can enjoy even more. Those who want boutique facilities in Zanzibar, they are also there, but usually I usually book them up in Melia Resort, which is one of the best in Zanzibar, or maybe the Sultan Palace in Zanzibar.
Mm-hmm.
So those are some of the high end properties where at least they can have full board everything. So usually because it's a culture and wellness. The cultural facilities or the cultural villages within Uganda.
Okay.
We actually have some cultural villages which are near the national parks. So they go for the whole cultural immersion and then the following day they will be going for a game drive. And that's where they get a bit of both of the experiences. So that's how the budget looks like. Depending on the client's budget, they can get $80 accommodation. In the park, it might not be the best accommodation. But then from $100, $200, $250,
$300,
it's going up. But I'm sure at $200, you can get a really nice place.
Okay. Wait, say that one more time.
The price changes differently than when you're single.
Okay.
Yeah, the price changes like for a shared room.
Right, because you would be going like per person. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So So it's like kind of like a two-part question, right? Or it's like a one question that has two parts. So there are some places in every country that are more prone to tourism than other places, right? So for the places that most tourists... I'm sorry, go on.
Yes.
Oh. Well, I can still see you on my end, and I still see both ends. I think it should be okay. Okay. So for any country, there are some places where tourism exists and where it doesn't exist, right? So for the places that tourism generally does exist, what are those communities like? What are the options for someone that is coming to visit, right? So some places are destinations where you, for example, might feel comfortable piecemealing a trip, where you just figure it out on your own. You look at a Airbnb or you go to Expedia and you find like a hotel, you find a place to stay and you just go there and then explore the community and hope for the best about the community that you're going to end up in, right? So considering that most hotels and Airbnbs are in those areas that are going to have a lot more tourism than peripheral areas, what do those communities in general generally feel about the people that are coming in to visit? Whether you put it together yourself and kind of just stay in the areas that have like the most hotels or the most Airbnbs, or whether or not you book with an operating tour guide like yourself or a tour agent and they put you in one of these places, like what can you expect for your experience in like the local communities? And how, like, because then the next question is like how to be an ethical tourist. Like when you're visiting someplace, like how do you include yourself in the communities in a way that you're leaving something positive behind more so than taking something on, you know, taking something and being a drain of resources as opposed to just sharing space with somebody.
Okay, that question is a bit tricky, but I understand where it's when you're asking for the social aspect of the tourism industry to the community where the tourism is thriving. Yeah, there's not so much negative impact of the tourists to the communities because we have not yet had the point of mass tourism. You know, the challenges that the communities usually face, which are usually in tourism-dense areas, challenges of wildlife community conflict. So usually, because our tourism in Uganda is nature-based, so it's more of wildlife and safaris, the communities around the areas where there is a lot of thriving tourism are usually also communities next to the park, you know. So usually the conflict that is there is between the communities and the wildlife, hardly between the communities and the people. If there's any relationship between the communities and the people, it's usually a positive relationship because the more tourists come, there's more employment in the area, there's more money flowing, whether even though the people are not staying, even though they might not be direct, like if there is a lodge in a community, the lodge will definitely buy its supplies from the people in the community. The tomatoes, the eggs, some of the bacon, some of the beef from the people. So they'll definitely be getting market for their produce. Relationship at the moment because...
It sounds like there are more smaller chain boutique hotels, like privately owned hotels versus massive chains of properties that are just kind of along the coastline and just kind of making it feel kind of icky.
For Uganda, yes, we do have a lot of boutiques.
Okay.
For Tanzania, Kenya, there are a number of chains along the way. Even Zanzibar, there are a number of chains, though they are also privately owned.
And it's not that there's anything...
But some of the really nice
it's,
ones...
It's tough to say that there's nothing wrong with the chains. Like, I don't want to demonize the chains on the one hand, because it's like, on the one hand, it's just, yes, they do employ some people. And, I mean... You feel like you want to lean towards there being some good coming from it. But at the other hand, it's kind of like, ooh, I don't know. You kind of question, like, if you had the choice, like, personally, if I had the choice, I can only speak to what my personal choice would be. And my personal choice would always to be my comfort first. But I would hope that I would be able to make a comfortable decision that is in alignment with my ethics. And I would hope that that would be, and that's another reason why some people like make choices to go to one destination versus another, whereas as someone might decide, well, you know what, I am more inclined to want to do a boutique hotel, so I would prefer to go to Uganda so that I can book that. Or I know that I personally may be more comfortable with a, I don't have to think about everything. This resort has everything that I'm currently comfortable with. And honestly, this is just what I need right now in my life. I could see that being available and accessible to someone where it is there. So I could see why people want either way. I'm just curious as to like how much of the business that you kind of like spread around is for like the local community. Like, how close am I going to be with spending my money with someone that I would want to have my money versus it just going to like a larger corporation? People coming over from China and popping a hotel someplace and just making money off of the land there. You understand what I'm saying? I'd rather give my money to someone who was born in Uganda or someone who moved to Uganda because they married somebody from Uganda 27 years ago and you've built your family here and you've built community here. You understand? Like, I feel like there is more of a social awareness around the way we travel. And it's like, while going to the Marriott is fun, I'd rather marry and get my money and build a relationship with Marion and see her smile when I leave, as opposed to, you know, you're nice there, but.
Ooh. Yeah, you're actually right.
Mm-hmm.
That is a very conversation. It's actually a very deep and big conversation and very mature conversation. And very many people think that far, that, oh, I'm going to this hotel, who owns it? When I'm working with in my company, something I didn't mention, first, I work purely with women. So I have female travel guides that I work with because of we want to see what impact can we have more as women. And also because as a woman in the industry, I faced a lot of challenges over the years of many people thinking that this is a male-dominated industry, no serious Black African woman is going to be doing this.
Masochistic.
And because
misogynist,
still very misogynist. And also, it also now has a part it plays with accommodations. Personally, in Uganda, because we still have a number of properties owned by locals, I always my clients in luxury properties where I can, but owned by locals. And they're there. There are really many, you know. Uganda, most of the properties are actually locally owned. Very few are chains. And maybe those would be the resorts within Kampala or Entebbe. But even in those areas, there are nice boutique resorts which are locally owned. You know, so I always take time to discover some of these properties and take my clients there because I understand what you're talking about. I want to know that my money is going to Ugandan, who is maybe even employing their staff and treating them right. Because I have worked for a gentleman who's British, but he has grown up here and has three lodges, but still treats his staff like they are like half humans. Yet he has worked here for 20 years, all his money here, still treats people in a particular way, you know? And so I see it and I'm like, I would really want to support my own.
Yeah.
And I understand it. And it's very good for even socioeconomics, you know, because you see someone from a particular area, maybe they go to school, they get educated, then they come back and do the lodge in that area. That is amazing. You know, we see a lot of lodge in Uganda. Even now, it's a small challenge where you see a local, a Ugandan who build a hotel, but then who'd want a Muzungu to come and manage it or a white man to come and manage
the
hotel. Yet we still have very many people here who have the skills. So it's a very, you see, when you mentioned it, I was like, that's a very deep and smart way, but not very many people think that way, you know. And I, as a tour operator, do my best to ensure that, you know, we have a better system that supports our local businessmen, supports the women in the industry.
I like that.
And has a
so you had mentioned that you work with strictly women, and I know you also have a travel community, Girls Tour Africa. So what do those two intersect? What is Girls Tour America, Africa?
Yes, Okay, so first, I noticed through the years of working that because very few people know have information about Africa or what to expect when they travel to Africa, that the group of solo travelers has grown. You know, there's a lot of solo travel around the world and group travels for women, but very few are in Africa. Very few are coming to Uganda. You know, no matter how beautiful we are as a destination, very few are coming. Very few are doing, okay, a number has increased during the Victoria Falls section, that's Zimbabwe, Zambia, Botswana, but
That's
still
it.
very few. Why? There is lack of information, you know. But then also as a woman, the security, when you hear Africa, the safety is highly questionable, you know. And that's why we emphasize, because already as a tour company, we were working purely with female travel guides. Because I myself, as a woman, I wanted to provide more opportunities for my fellow women because I saw the challenges I faced. You know, the first time I had a child, wondered if I would work again. And very many women in the industry face the same challenges. Hardly do women have an opportunity, no matter how skilled they are,
That says,
to take care for a safari because some men feel like, will she handle? She's a woman. So I was like, you know what? Whenever I get clients, I'm giving them to these ladies. And they are amazing. They do great jobs. There's a group we had 30 ladies from the US. They came, they wanted to do gorillas. So they did gorillas, did a bit of Rwanda, Lake Kivu, you know, and Congo. So we had a whole women-led team. So we had the safari jeeps. So we had four safari jeeps having seven. You know, women in all the jeeps, and they were led by female guides, and that these ladies did an amazing job. They were great drivers. They even had mechanical skills, like in case a car would like try to clean up, they would like open the bumper and checking things and putting water here. And I'm like, huh. And their ladies are mothers. You know, they have families they run, and they are great at their job. And most times they're not given the opportunity they deserve. So
That's
when I
beautiful.
can, I definitely give it to them. Yeah. And so that is with the guides. But then with Girls Tour Africa, we develop community to encourage women to travel to Africa because we are working purely with female guides. I know women who even feel safer if you tell them the hotel they're staying at is owned by a woman. You know, they'll be like, okay, that is safe. Because we have had cases of hotels not being very safe for women, you know, some women going on trips with a male guide and he's acting funny and he's making moves. Most times when they're with fellow women, they're like, okay, at least that is one less thing to worry about, you know. And because we're all women, there's a bit of understanding of some particular situations we all go through, and I feel it's easier to travel to Africa
So is
with fellow women.
it
So that's
a
how we did the community of Girls
separate
Tour
tour
Africa.
guide or like a tour company, or is it more of like an online community that encourages women to come visit East Africa? How does one participate with Girls Tour Africa? Okay, so it's a
We handle their trips for them. So Trugendo Afrique, which is a company, it's to Girls Tour Africa is basically like our core offering to the black women or women of color, attracting them to come to Africa. So it's our core offering. We're like, you know what? We shall take you for a safari. You know, it's the same thing we do with Trugendo Afrique, but this is more specific. So sometimes, like even this year, we have a trip in August, which is being marketed on Girls Tour Africa, but will definitely be handled by Tugende under Girls Tour Africa. So it will be handled by female guides, you know, but then this community can attract women from different places to come and book for this trip and then do it. Yeah, so it's our core product that we sell as Tugende Africa. So that's why we developed it as a community. So that even now women can come and share their experiences. We can share the content from the trips we've had there as we continue the operations of Trugendo Afrique, but we handle the Girls Tour Africa as it
So
comes with a specific and special
what
plan.
is that region's, I guess, social acceptance, if you will, of like the queer community and feminine presenting men. Because for me, when I think of women, my idea of women is a lot more broader, is a lot more broad than many people would agree to. And that's, I'm not here to change anybody's mind. But for the people that I am in community with that represent and exist in different pockets of femininity and self-expression, what, in your experience, has that been like for people who present femininely a little bit differently than some people may be comfortable with? Like, is this a safe space for solo travelers who don't necessarily present the same way, or for queer people, or people who are obviously queer? Because not everybody is obviously queer, right? But then some people are. So it's like, is this a tour stop that maybe is not comfortable now and someday? Or is this like, what can people really honestly expect? Will they feel safe? Will they feel, you know, comfortable in this region being themselves? Okay.
Yes, that is very true. Definitely. Okay. Of course, there are some bit of guidelines, like dress code is definitely looked at, mainly in some areas. Like if you are going to be coming from the airport into your safari jeep straight to your hotel, you know, then you go for the safari or you go for the cultural experience, and then you come back and fly out without interfacing with the local communities so much, you wouldn't have any issue. Like you would dress the way you want because you'll be in your own safari mm-hmm. jeep.
The accommodating to everybody.
They are very liberal facilities. But then if you're going into, you're going to, let's say, walk within downtown Kampala, you know, like a real downtown of Kampala, the way you dress, maybe having a longer, you know, not having like quarter pants or patras. So there's small places where you would have to like be cautious of how you dress. But otherwise, there's a lot of liberal expression in the communities, even uptown Kampala, even in the outskirts, in the different communities and different districts, which are not very crowded. People are going by their business and hardly, look out to say, oh.
So, I mean, I'm not asking you to promise anybody's safety. I would never do that. Everybody's experience is going to be different. But I just wanted to get a temperature of what's the tone in the area like. And is that for the region or is that more just Uganda? Like, can that be expected like in Tanzania or Zimbabwe? What are the other regions that you specialize in, like similar? Okay, great.
Yes, because even in Zanzibar, because I was in Zanzibar mid-Feb, and I was with some other tour operators who were going to inspect the hotels we use. And one of the tour operators had a very small skirt, very short skirt, you know, and we're moving within Stone Town. And she was getting like stares and sound like people throwing words at her. And she was like, ah. So whenever we would go to other areas, which are not very crowded, more touristic, no one really cared. But whenever she was coming into Stone Town, which is more crowded and has more native Zanzibarians, she had to have a lesson because of that. And this is an African woman. She's a Kenyan, you know. So this is normal. Even in Arusha, I worked in Arusha for a year. And I remember one time I'd come from a work conference and I was wearing a dress which was just above my knees. Mm-hmm. But I think it was a bit tight. So if I walked, it would go higher. And it was a work conference, so it was okay. I was decent. I was presentable. So I walk out. My office was not very far from where the meeting was. So I was like, maybe let me walk back to my office. And then I thought, maybe let me pass through the market. I couldn't pass through the market. Dress, you know? And people started saying, like, saying all these words, like, no one, of course, touches you or tries to harass you, but they will definitely make you realize that, oh, the dress is a bit too short, you see. Yeah, just being, and that this is in the market. Remember, I'm in Arusha. I was in the hotel. Okay. It was okay. I was not indecent.
Community.
Because I'm in the market now, which is, so even.
Okay. So it's one of those places that you want to be prepared to be respectful for different environments, is a fair assessment. Copy. And that's, you're in somebody else's home. Like, as a traveler, I feel like you can't necessarily claim to be an ethical traveler and care about, you know, who your money is going to if you can't even be respectful of the norms of the culture that you're visiting. Like, there are certain, like, let's not get crazy. You know what I mean? Like, it's one thing to say, don't be yourself. But then it's another thing to say that you want to experience or visit or interact with people of a different country while still not being respectful of their norms. Like, part of traveling is that exchange in learning what is normal to different people. And by no stretch of the imagination is it an invitation to be disrespected or to be disrespectful or to go beyond your boundaries. But it's more of you do yourself more of a service to kind of maybe ask what types of clothing to be, prepared to have on hand. I know that was one of the things that I, the only place in Africa I have been to was Morocco. I've been to Casablanca, and that's the only place that I've been able to visit so far. And I did my little bit of Googles, and I realized, oh, and also I was going to Qatar during Ramadan. So it was like, okay, so Muslim areas, I'm definitely very American. Let me figure out what to wear and not what to wear. And so it's like, you know, the shoulders, the knees and the legs out, the elbows. So it's just like, I got to go shopping. I got to get some stuff. And so it's like just having an awareness that don't be that American or don't be that European. Don't be that girl. Don't be that boy. Like, just be easy. Go with the anticipation that you may have to do something a little different. The same way you may expect if somebody's going to come to your house that they kind of, you know, roll with the punches and kind of get right with the program. So I know that you said you've been in the travel industry for, it was like 8 years, you said, right? What has that been? What has that experience been like for you? And how did you get into travel? What was your, like, life before travel? Did you travel often? Were you into travel yourself? Have you lived in a bunch of places? Like, what got Lynette into travel industry?
Thank you. So I joined the industry very, very, very young. I think I was 20 years. Yeah. Growing up, we traveled, not so much, usually Christmas, end of year, travel with family. And I always loved the whole experience of travel. You know, I even like the idea of just exploring a new spot, you know, even just walking by the street and I branch to a place I've not branched. It's always exciting for me, you know, just the whole exploring and seeing new things. I'm like, oh, okay. So it has always been a thing that I like to do. So during my high school, I got a mentor. So the mentor kept drilling me. He kept telling me, Lynette, you have to know what you want to do for the rest of your life. I'm like, I don't know. I'm just in high school. I'm just done with school. And he kept saying, what's that one thing you'd want to do? You know how motivational speakers be. What's that one thing you'd want to do for the rest of your life and not get tired and what? I'm like, okay, I like to travel. I've liked it for the years. So I was like, okay. So I had two options. I had either to do acting because I was into poetry. I still write poetry. So I was like, maybe I should be an actress, you know, or maybe I should join the tourism industry. So we were like, you know what? Try out both and see which one, where you will fit. So after high school, during holiday, usually you have a high school break before you join university. Usually it's 6 months. Yeah. Yeah, so it's called vacation, actually. So your sixth vacation, he introduced me to some people in the industry, the tourism industry. Mm-hmm. So I wrote applications. I was like, you know what? Go and volunteer at these places so that you see if you actually want to be in the industry. So I volunteered to be a site guide at one of the facilities to you know, I was just out of high school. Of course, I wouldn't be given the opportunity. But because my mentor was very good friends with one of the ministers of tourism, I just wrote my application, submitted, and the minister stamped on it and I was given the chance, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was, I was 20 years, you know, and I liked every step of the way. I met people and have just been growing. So after the internship, after mm-hmm. the volunteering, university opened, 6 months went by so fast. University opened, and where I was volunteering, nice. They were like, well, we can retain you. You can study as you work. So I signed up for evening classes, kept working while studying. And it was so practical. Like the things we would study in class to me would
nice.
So fast because I was in the industry. I was seeing these things firsthand. So it even reassured me love for the industry, for the travel. So I mm-hmm. ended up doing so much. That's how I ended up working in Tanzania just after school, like before I got my certificate, my graduation. I was already a marketing manager in Tanzania, you know, and I was getting jobs all over the place because I think I began way earlier than my mates. And it has been a beautiful journey. And that's how the 8 years come into play. And it has been exciting. Mm-hmm. It has been exciting. So that's how I joined the tourism industry. It has been a learning process. I've worked in Tanzania. I have worked back in Uganda, done some work in Rwanda.
Mm-hmm.
Then recently I started doing trips in Zimbabwe, Zambia, Botswana. So I'm doing a lot of learning mm-hmm. about the industry. But then also as a lady, showed me more of what the women go through in the industry. Because since I joined when I was just in high school, VAC.
Like in what?
The vacation of high school.
Mm.
There were small challenges. Yeah. You know, people wanting to take advantage. You know, you're meeting all the big people in the industry.
Okay.
You're young. I think I volunteered too much for too long. I shouldn't have volunteered that long. I should have, I think, worked harder to start making my own money.
Mm-hmm.
Because I volunteered for so long, people got used to the fact that I was volunteering. And
they
refused to.
They're like, no, but you'll do it for free.
So when opportunities would come for employment, they'd recommend me.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So until I realized that I took a step back and withdrew from, like, I had made all the contacts. I knew all the big players in the industry. And very few, actually, the people who were willing to give me paid employment were not the people I knew. All the people I knew were like, come, we do work. And I'm like, okay. Because after university, I'm like, okay, now money has to start getting in. Like, I can't start keep doing the free work. And I think someone was very amused with that. So I noticed and I just took a step back and realigned my moves. Yeah, so in 2019.
Okay, and so can you spell out what the name of the company is? Where can we find you? Where can we get more information about what the initiatives you are with Girls Tour Africa? How do you spell your company? And I'm going to definitely have that in the description box below. But where can we find you and where can we support you? And how can we support you? What does support look like to you also?
Okay, thank you. So the company is... support to Tugende Afrique looks like recommendations, looks like sharing ideas. This podcast is a great support to Tugende Afrique, to Girls Tour Africa. You know, our vision is to see more women of color mainly travel safely within Africa. Our vision is to see more women living a fulfilled life through wellness travel. That's why we're really, really pushing the wellness travel because very many women are stressed up. You know, if they are married, then they have work and they have marriage and they hardly have a chance to relax and rejuvenate and just have a chance to just be, you know. So we're trying to break the glass ceiling off, you know, sharing as much information as we can out there about the tourism industry, about the wellness, about couch tour immersion, about, you know, you know, soul-nourished vacations to the islands and Victoria Falls adventures and the wild experience. So our support would be people booking those trips, because what we want to see is more women travel and have a beautiful time and even live a more fulfilled life. Because I'm sure whenever you traveled, you must have come back home happier, stronger, more grateful for the things you love to do. And I feel this is something very few women have gotten a chance to experience, you know. So we want to share more of that. And that's our support, that we would love to see more of the Black community come into Africa, explore, emerge with the cultures.
And where can we do that? Where can we find you?
More vibrant as people. Yes. Yes. So the easiest place, the easiest access could be to just send us a message on my personal page, which is Lynette Lux Travel. Or you could send a message to Gende Africa, because we also have an Instagram page. Yeah. So if you come to Lynette Lux Travel, it's a one stop center. I'll be able to respond to all the messages. You can check out our website at togendeafric.com. Togende is T-U-G-E-N-D. Then Afrique.
Okay.
Afrique with a K. A-F-R-I-K. Yeah. So yeah, Afrique, where you now see some sample itineraries, you get to read some documents. We have a blog, some blog posts. I have a YouTube channel where I've been posting the last 5 years, some of my travel expeditions, which is Lynette Nakamanya or Nakamanya Lynette. I'll also share the link. But I'm more active currently on my Instagram page, where I'm constantly updating more information about travel across Africa, in Uganda, you know, tips and ideas. So messaging me
and
there.
We would definitely love to get that message out there so that you could be supported. You've done an amazing job on selling me on Uganda. I would love, love, love to be able to be out there and visit you guys. And I know after this conversation, more than just me, would love to get out there and visit you too. Travel is so much more than vacation, and it is a wealth of the incredible and beautiful experiences and the people that we meet and the environments and communities that we're able to experience abroad. Lynette, thank you so, so much for joining me. And I hope you guys will join me again next week for another conversation about those nuanced ways that travel intersects with regular life, folks. Bye.